The Guardian.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Today, internationals. Rocco and Mateus. England lead Bulgarians in severe discomfort with a 3-0 win. Moving closer to Euro 2012. Elsewhere, 8-2. Pa! Van Persie on the right side of a drubbing this time. An orange crush San Marino, 11-0. We give love to the land Garibaldi forgot and look ahead to Tuesday's big matches, tugging our forelocks to the Germans, the first nation to qualify. Also today, hosts Greg Ruffley's wedding, Norwich, Birmingham City, and more other stuff in today's One for the Completists Football Weekly. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Football Weekly. It's Tom Lutz.
Hello.
Hi, Tom. Have you been well?
Yeah, generally.
Bet you've been well this weekend with the Greg Ruffley wedding.
Yeah, it was a very good
wedding. More on that
wedding
later, listeners. Paolo Bandini.
Hello.
Hello. And Paolo McInnes.
Hello there.
Hello there to you. Good beefy greeting there. Nice to see. England win away against Bulgaria. There you go. Breath of fresh air, new generation, proof of new confidence and character in a difficult away game. All things that were said after the win in Zagreb back in 2009. Why is this any different, if it is any different, Paul McInnes?
It was a terrible game.
It was a terrible game, which England won in quite comfortable fashion.
Yeah, comfortably. Playing kick and rush football and with some, you know, talented players in the final third.
Now,
who were capable of making little triangles in and around the box and forcing delivering good set pieces.
See, I thought that Paul would be in here full of optimism and excitement about England's performance. And
I see, Lutz is looking incredulous.
Well, the terrible thing about international football is that you've got to make these conclusions after one game every few months rather than a series of games. So, as a caveat, this is after one game. But Wayne Rooney looked happy playing for England for the first time in a long time, and even in the second half, which not all of us managed to watch, mentioning no names, but he was kind of doing little tricks right to the end, which when you contrast that with a year ago going off after Algeria in the World Cup swearing at the fans, he looked like a man revitalised.
Paolo.
Well, it was interesting, wasn't it? Just before, actually it's probably a bit more than just before the weekend, but of course we've recently had this all this stuff come out from Gary Neville's book, and he's written about essentially how much of a shambles it's been in his opinion, and clearly that of some other players under a series of England managers, and about how the camp has often been an unhappy place, and how you went away to England games pretty much knowing you're on a high team to nothing, because whatever happened, you know, unless you won everything, you were going to come back and get slaughtered. But I do think it's interesting when you look at sort of the recent history of England doing, you know, pretty well in qualifiers, but then struggling in big tournaments. I think perhaps it's very easy for Wayne Rooney to take a weekend off from United, where he's very, very happy at the moment. Obviously, last year he wasn't especially happy there at one point. But it's very easy for him to come away and do that for a weekend, whether or not this means anything in terms of England's capability to go away for the best part of a month together and still be for happy and get on is a very different question.
That's a very different kettle of fish, you think? Mm. All right, then.
Cool. I agree wholeheartedly about the change in form in Rooney and how heartening that is, and also not to draw any conclusions at this point. I kind of tend to think you can't really draw any conclusions until they play a top eight international side in a quarterfinal of a major tournament and win it. However, what I would say is that we play well in September as well. We play well when we're fresh. We play well before we get to the end of the season and everybody's debilitated by injuries. And this Bulgaria team were terrible. They had good service from the wings, but they were absolutely terribly organised at the back. They were always pushing too many men forward, quite liable to getting caught on the counter-attack. And really, despite the fact that we couldn't keep more than four or five passes, as per usual, we were able to cut through them quite easily.
All right, well, you want to see England take on a proper, take on and beat a proper footballing nation before you come to
the
conclusion.
I just think that's the only, you know, we've all
got
to
Wales here coming up on Wednesday.
Well, they played quite well, didn't they, against Montenegro?
Yeah, they beat Montenegro.
But, you know,
bottom of the group, but, green shoots.
People are almost saying if we beat Wales, we've qualified, but that's rubbish, because
if you
Montenegro can easily beat us in Montenegro, and then it goes down to head-to-head record. It's not goal difference that decides teams, differentiates teams in its qualifying campaign. So if they beat us head-to-head, England would finish second.
And if they beat Switzerland away.
Yeah.
I suppose at some point we need to inevitably raise the fact that gets discussed every time at the moment, which is that, well, England are very good away from home, but at home, no, not good.
Yeah, haven't won in four, probably. Yeah.
It's interesting. Just as well we're not hosting the World Cup in 2018.
Yeah, good point there, actually. Yeah. No Craig Bellamy, thanks to Yellow Card Knack, but Steve Morrison, eh?
Steve Morrison.
Your, you know, Canary's very own Steve Morrison.
Yeah, I thought he bundled the ball home quite well for Wales. I think you've got, with this Wales side, you know, the fulcrum, the team is a new pool of young talent, and then you've got some hard-working, reasonably experienced players around it, and I probably put, you know, increasingly you put Morrison in that bracket. I think he's strong, he's reasonably mobile, he's good with his head. Not sure quite how great a finisher he is. I've only seen him in the flesh a couple of times for Norwich, but while he's been good with his approach play and caused defenders a lot of trouble, the half chances he's been presented, or indeed the complete chance he had against John Terry at Chelsea, didn't take. But we'll see.
We will. All right. Paolo?
Well, I think me and Tom would both got the same point here, which is it's interesting that Gareth Bale started on the right against Montenegro. And I think there's some interest now in seeing whether they would bring him back to the left to play opposite Chris Smalling, who obviously is still finding his way a little bit right back. Although it has to be said that I think Smalling had a very good game for United against Tottenham the other week. So you would have thought very possible that they'll keep him on the right. I mean, you know, Ashley Cole's an excellent, excellent defender, but, you know, perhaps in some ways more likely to have lost a little bit in his legs as he's getting a little bit older and maybe more vulnerable to the speed of Bale. I don't know. I think it's going to be a tough gig either way, and Gareth Bale hasn't been playing at the levels that he was at a certain point last season.
But, yeah, I think as well, a lot of his service against Montenegro, he was kind of being released a lot by Aaron Ramsey as well. So I imagine they might... Well, there's talk that Lampard's going to be back in the side, which, well, yeah, if that's good news, I don't think it is. But whether they put Parker to kind of quieten down Ramsey so that Bale's not getting the service.
I really enjoyed the Fabio Capello explanation for Lampard not playing against Bulgaria, which is that I could only pick four midfielders. And I thought to myself, how many midfielders would you need? Well, first of all, that's actually not true. He could have, if he'd wanted to, gone with 10 midfielders. I wouldn't
like
necessarily cancel it. Yeah. But how many would you need to be allowed before you get Lampard in now? I don't know.
Did you, going back to Ashley Cole, what you were just saying a minute ago, did you think he looked like he was running through treacle a bit on Friday? I thought he was struggling with their right winger. It's the first time I'd ever seen that. I mean, I saw him. I saw him up against our lot, against Cal Norton the weekend before. He didn't struggle then, but he looked like he was struggling for pace, which I'd never seen.
Tactically, is he now back with her?
What you mean strategically in the case of developing her career?
No, but I mean, are they back together?
They were for a bit, but I think when she got kicked out of X Factor USA, there was a PR expert on the news who said straight away that I'll bet you within 6 weeks she'll be back with Ashley, but by Christmas they won't be together again.
All right, and then she'll marry Bobby Brown, presumably, at that point.
No. That's...
It's wrong.
Who would wish Cheryl on anybody?
Okay. Gary Cahill?
Gary Cahill.
Just saying.
Yeah, looked accomplished. Nice goal.
And if you, I thought you were wishing Cheryl Cole on Gary Cahill.
Do worse.
Well, he's stars on the rise. The other thing about Gary Cahill is how many players playing well for England now were at Villa at some point. If Villa had stuck on, they'd have Gary Cahill, Ashley Young, Milner, who doesn't play that well for England, and Gareth Barry as well. So that's, you know, four key players for England.
Stuart Downing.
I forgot Stuart Downing as well.
What about Darren Bent?
And Darren Bent.
Right.
He was injured.
Right.
I was just going to say, I thought it was interesting on some level. It was only five.
Producer Ben wants to add Heskey into that list.
And
Paolo, you just roll on.
I'm just going to give up. Yeah. I thought it was interesting. There's only five of the starting 11 played in the 4-0 win over Bulgaria at home, which I guess suggests, at least on some level, that England have now got a squad of players that they can call on for games like that and be able to rely on them to win without, you know, even if it isn't the same 11 every time.
Let's say we're going to go with that formation kind of going forward. Do you think who would be your central midfield two if you had everybody to choose from?
It is a tough question, but, you know, I certainly don't think Lampard's part of it. You know, Gerrard is, you know, is perhaps a more compelling case, but actually, you know, Barry and Parker work pretty well. I'd like to see that same partnership given a chance against a more significant opposition.
Do you think that it's also been refreshing to see the more reasonable reaction to this big away win this weekend? There was very little kind of, oh, OK, well, now we're going to win the World Cup.
yeah,
our boys go, etc.
Don't you think it would absolutely fraudulent if any red top or even a broadsheet started banging the drum ahead of another major tournament? I mean, the evidence is in front of everybody's eyes. We fail every time, so there's absolutely no point trying to build it up.
I'm sure the players are quite happy that the reaction hasn't been.
I did see a lot in the papers of this is the end of the golden generation, you know, this is the passing of Matton. First of all, I thought, well, Barry and Parker aren't really a different generation. They're only a couple of years younger than those players. And secondly, whatever made that generation golden? What allowed us to term them that?
Hmm. Elsewhere, bad round for Ireland, Northern Ireland, and particularly Scotland. Craig Levine insists that the Scots can still make it, but they'll have to win all their remaining games and the Czechs will have to lose both theirs, one of which is Lithuania. But Scotland need to win in Spain, but having said that, the Spanish could be qualified by them. It was a very disappointing 2-2 draw. I don't know if you saw either half of that. Anybody?
No. I think it sort of touches on the England game as well, but I think this is one of the points that perhaps almost more salient than the actual football floppy this weekend is, where were the highlights? There was no highlights on terrestrial television of the England game.
They're right here, people. Says the producer's top satellite broadcast has offered a package. Although the Scottish game was on Sunday, bizarrely, or Saturday.
Why would you have a football match on a Saturday?
I don't know.
if you could possibly get away with it.
I'm very confused.
Can we talk about those penalties? Yeah. Because the penalty and the non-penalty.
Right.
Because I think you can be partisan and kind of say that one was more than the other or not. But I would put them reasonably in the same class of marginal contact, decisive intervention from forward player, convinces referee one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're just into a zone now where it's really going to be incredibly difficult for referees, because you very rarely get a foul without a dive or exaggeration, exactly. So that almost any contact in the box is going to be met by somebody drawing the referee's attention to it. And I think it's going to be increasingly difficult for referees to make a plain call one way or the other. And I wonder whether we're getting to the point where actually a referee should be able to award both a penalty and a yellow card for simulation.
Ooh.
Because otherwise you do get into the situation where if the acting is convincing enough, then people think there's been contact, or you judge the foul dependent on the performance of the attacker.
I have a funny feeling that that's actually happened, though. I really? Seem to remember somebody citing an instance where they gave a penalty and also a yellow card for being a wuss.
Well, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, that's
more
the future.
Of that, please.
Yeah, okay. Ireland need a win in Moscow now. Spirit of Paris, they're all saying, with blatant disregard for what the final score was and all that. But a draw with Slovakia, which has left them basically needing to beat the Russians away, Russians to move 2 points clear of that three-way tie that was going on with Ireland and Slovakia. All very exciting. Do you know what? That's all the part one we've got time for. After this, part two. Right. Bit more international news and views for you. Sid Lowe not joining us today. He's unwell, unfortunately. Get well soon, Sid. His friends in the Spanish national team cemented their reunion with a nice brawl against Chile, in which players from Barcelona stepped in to help out mates from Real Madrid as they took on the dastardly South Americans, etc. Spain lost another friendly. It was 3-2. The under-21s, meantime, had an absolutely whopping win. I think it was 7-2 against Georgia, but it featured an absolutely extraordinary own goal, well worth seeking out, dubbed by various YouTube enthusiasts as the greatest own goal ever. Basically, the Georgian keeper hoofs the ball upfield, and Spanish under-21 defender Inigo Martinez decides the clever thing to do will be to reach behind him with one foot and attempt to kind of half scorpion kick it away, but instead produces a wonderful volley that sails over the head of the hapless De Gea into the Spanish net. Anyway, Spain are taking on bottom place in the group Liechtenstein on Tuesday, and that'll see them through, I think, with a win. Very good. Now, Germany are through. Big 6-2 victory over Austria. Holland almost through. 11-0 they beat San Marino. Wesley Sneijder had a hand in all the goals, apparently.
United should buy him.
United should buy him.
Yeah.
Private jet and all, Tom. Yeah,
little tip for...
He scored a couple of them. Robin van Persie, 4 goals for him.
He's right, that Robin van Persie, isn't he?
He certainly is.
He's got something about him.
Mind you, they were playing San Marino. Do qualifiers like this do international football no favours at all, or is 11-0 quite good fun, actually?
It's good fun. Yeah. I just like to see bad teams absolutely battered.
Oh.
And the argument that it all comes down to goal difference and like that's not fair if Holland beat them 11-0. UEFA have changed that, I think I said earlier, so that it's now head-to-head results that separate teams, so it doesn't really matter.
I think most people would rather see their, you know, most, I suppose, people who support big nations would rather see their team thrash a San Marino than beat a Bulgaria 3-0 or 4-0. You know, you really want to make something of it and get ridiculous scorelines like that. It's more entertaining.
Mm. It does throw out that occasional moment out of the famous time when San Marino scored after 8.3 seconds.
Yeah, they scored the fastest goal in qualifying history, or indeed, I don't know, international history. This is the famous occasion when England, what was it, 8-0 that England had to win to qualify for the World Cup in 1990?
Well, and I think Holland had to slip up.
Oh,
well.
Right.
Yeah.
And did the English press not offer money to Holland's opponents? I think, or was that another disastrous qualifying? Anyway,
Poland
then
that needed to slip up.
So, Tom, you sat down. You were telling me you sat down to dinner. Your mum let you watch.
There's a Lutz House rule that you're not allowed to eat dinner in the front room.
Yeah, fair
but
enough.
For that game, because I'd been a good boy that week, I got to eat chicken pasta in front of the San Marino game.
Right,
and I was just putting a delicious chunk of chicken into my mouth as the goal went in, and my mouth just hung open, fork in midair.
Right.
And I thought, this is like something out of the movies. This is a cliche. I was only 13 or something, but I was thinking it then.
But already incredibly aware.
Did you get a sense of that's what life was going to be like as an adult, one of perennial disappointment?
Yeah, that was the start.
I'm just
really
getting ready to be happy with this piece of chicken and now San Marino score.
Yeah. It put me off chicken pasta for life as well.
Did you know that the Republic of San Marino have never won a competitive fixture? They did win 1-0 once against Liechtenstein, but that was just a friendly.
Haven't they had a draw recently, or in the last couple of
years? Well, they've conceded 89 goals without reply. That's pretty good, isn't it?
Wow.
Well done, San Marino.
It must be a particular feeling.
Well, you're an Arsenal fan, you must know all about it.
Well, but getting ready in the changing room for your next international game and going, yeah, kind of know what this is going to work out, don't we? You sit there and talk tactics and what you're going to do, but you're sort of like, yeah, it doesn't really matter, does it?
It's all about the pride of pulling on the San Marino shirt, that fabled white.
So it's good to have teams like San Marino and the Faroe Islands for big nations to come along and really rack up the goals against, eh, Paolo?
All I'm saying is I just feel, you know, you can talk about it devaluing the competition, but there's lots of games, there's lots of games in qualifying that end up being a bit meaningless, and for many fans it's more entertaining to see a totally lopsided result than it is to see a half-heartedly lopsided one.
I was actually trying to segue to perhaps to what one of those. Yeah, Italy's trip to the Faroe Islands, where they Holland got 11. How many did Italy get in the Faroe Islands?
Oh, I think it was one, which was offside, incidentally. But
they got a goal from Cassano that was fairly clearly offside.
Yeah, and then the Faroe Islands hit the woodwork twice.
Yeah.
So when was the Italy goal? Was it late on?
No, it was right
11
at the
minutes.
Beginning. And actually, it was kind of interesting because, for the as ridiculous as it is to say, for those first few sort of 15 minutes, you're like, wow, Italy are, you know, going to do the job of a big international side here, and they're going to do a number on the Faroe Islands. They were playing very well, and then just after that, it all just slowly rotted away. But
why do you think, Paolo? Because they've been doing so well. I mean, they've only conceded, was it one goal in all their qualifying? They've got the best defensive record.
Yeah, they've only conceded one goal in qualifying, which, I mean, that in itself is a really interesting statistic, because you look at this Italy team, and it's far from, first of all, it's far from an inherently defensive side, and it's also far from the greatest in terms of the defenders it's got in it compared to, you know, recent Italy sides. You're looking at Giorgio Chiellini really being the only player in there who you'd say stacks up with some, you know, recent past Italian defences who's, you know, of that calibre. So it's a team that's not necessarily defensive or that way inclined. But what Prandelli's reasoning for it was, well, actually, these days we play with the ball much higher up the pitch, and that's, you know, that's how he's explained it, is that we seek to retain possession in the other half rather than constantly, as we have before, keeping it in our own half, and then when you lose it, you risk conceding a goal.
Does a 1-0 against Faroe Islands, does that count as a humiliating win?
No, to be honest with you, I think this is a slightly facile explanation, but it's also worth pointing out that Serie A did get delayed, and most of these players do play in Serie A, and it's all been a bit tumultuous. But I think that Italy often, in recent past, have made heavy work of beating poor sides.
Hmm.
And,
right.
And their most recent trip to the Faroe Islands was 2007. They only won 2-1, and I think it was a similarly bad game. So I think they'll be very happy. They now need, I think, 2 points to qualify to secure first place in that group, and I think that's really all that matters.
All right. Another couple of bits of Italian news over the weekend, which might be of interest. Diego Forlan, who Inter signed to replace Samuel Eto'o, and they duly put in their list of 25 players for the Champions League. The UEFA people sent the note back saying, sorry, you can't have him because he's already played for Atletico Madrid.
Well, this is one of the most legitimately startling sort of oversights that I can think of in recent time. It's kind of interesting, actually, because Inter were the benefits of a similarly startling administrative oversight earlier this summer when they had a co-ownership of the goalkeeper Emiliano Viviano with Bologna, and Bologna wanted to sign the player and offered more money to complete the signing of the player, but filled in the wrong boxes on the form with the wrong numbers, and so he wound up going to Inter. So Inter benefits of one administrative oversight, but this is staggering because Forlan had played in the Europa League qualifier against, I've got it here, third round qualifying against Stromgodset. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. Probably not. Basically, Inter's directors, once it came out that he'd played in this game and he can't play, therefore, in the Champions League group stages, their explanation was not, oh, well, we thought that was okay to play in a Europa League qualifying. It was, we'd missed the fact that he'd played against Stromgodset.
Yeah, we were in America at the time,
yeah,
they said.
Exactly. They had various pre-season commitments. They were in Dublin, they were in Peking for the Super Cup. And basically, the explanation that's been given is he played in two legs and Inter's directors failed to notice that fact.
Yeah, and Atletico Madrid must be laughing.
Ah, it's absurd. I mean, it's a genuinely absurd oversight. But the issue is basically he can now play from January, but not if Inter go down to the Europa League and Atletico still in it.
Yeah, interesting. He will be able to play in Serie A, but he can't play in the Champions League. And UEFA said, sorry about that, and no, you can't change your list to include somebody else in his place. Also, Champions League action misery, Pippo Inzaghi. A lot of unrest. Poor old Pippo, eh?
I think it's sad, and I also think it's a big mistake because they've only gone with a squad now with four.
He's 38, Paolo.
But they've gone with a squad with only four attackers in it, which I think is less than you're going to find in almost any of the Champions League squads. It's a team that you saw last season labouring for a goal against Tottenham when someone like Pippo was probably exactly what they needed. And he actually, was it last season? Goals against Real Madrid at the crucial moment?
Yeah, fair enough.
He's. The thing with Pippo is he's just coming back from his cruciate ligament injury. He's not going to play 90 minutes. He can only give you so much, but he has always been and continues to be the sort of player that you can put on for 10 minutes at the end of a game and might just score you a goal. So I think it's a mistake.
Just out of interest, who are the four forwards Milan put for?
Ibrahimovic, Rabinho, and Cassano.
There you go. It's not a bad lineup, but still. Not that many of them. Right.
And only one proper striker, really, there, I suppose.
Yeah, I think there would be those who'd try and... The
thing is that Kevin Prince-Boateng, they would say, can easily move
into
that role.
Well, exactly. And Seedorf, I think, is in there as well. So they're players who could be pushed forwards. But I don't know. I think you've left yourself short of goal scoring.
Part three. And if you thought today's lineup was special, well, then clearly you're right. And Thursday's is as well. When we'll have... Philippe Auclair in. So, Damien, your post about is Ligue 1 on its way up and how they managed to hang on to all their players and buy Joe Cole and Pastore, perhaps more relevantly, when that post can be answered by Philippe Auclair, noted Frenchman. Also in will be top Brazilian chum of pod, Fernando Duarte, and the man who actually provides both characters by putting on funny hats and silly voices, Barry Glendening. Super. In other post news, Matty Linoz says, from the nominative determinism department where I grew up, there was a dental practice owned by Dr. Pullum. Dublin Roo says, Jimbo, I'm really disappointed nobody mentioned Lothar Matthäus as an example of nominative determinism, you know, given his track record with the ladies. And, Ian Martin says, Arsenal, Mancini at Man City. Blah, blah, blah. It's a pretty poor batch of nominative determinism examples, isn't it? I'm sure there's some great ones out there.
So actually, I didn't know because I didn't listen to the pod on Thursday, but I didn't know what nominative determinism was. I thought it was actually going to be something, but it basically means somebody having the same name as the job, what they do.
Yeah,
I thought
exactly.
It was some school of philosophy. Or
yeah, that's what I thought we were going to be going
I should
to.
Know.
This is what St. Augustine had to say on the matter. Yeah. No, it's like Barry Chopper, works as a lumberjack.
Well, that's a good one right there.
yeah,
all right.
That one up there.
Okay. Greg Ruffley's wedding, Tom Lutz.
Yeah,
it's roughly. Do you think that's nominative determinism?
I'm not going to do that.
No, I'm saying, you know, he's a journalist.
Well, he's Bukowski, you know, anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
But it was a lovely ceremony, a very good-looking couple. I was lucky enough to sit next to Barry Glendenning.
All right, then.
At this ceremony. And as Anna...
Did Barry behave himself? I think that's
what
this is wanting.
There was one comment, as Anna came in, he leant over to me and said, Ruffley's punching above his weight there,
right.
Which I thought was unfair. But then... We did get a lot of attention for Football Weekly.
Did you?
Someone asked me what you were really like.
Oh, right. And what did you tell them? I'm fascinated.
It's all right.
Tell me, what was their song? When Greg and Mrs. Greg did their dance, what was their song?
Well, Greg wrote a poem that was read out in the ceremony, which was beautiful.
Greg wrote this?
Yeah.
Can you recite any?
I know, like, every line, there was repetition, and it said, I breathe. There was a few people that cried after hearing it. Again, Baz leant over and said something, which is actually offensive and I won't repeat about Greg's poem.
Right.
But
the song, Paolo, you know what it is.
It was The Ring of Fire.
By, you know, the big fella.
Johnny Cash.
No way.
But they didn't, I have to
say. Because they're Liverpool or what?
They didn't dance. They didn't actually do very much first dancing because they definitely started roping in the crowd after about 15 seconds.
The final song was You'll Never Walk Alone, which was being belted.
So it was basically all kind of Anfield favourites.
Yeah.
All right. You went for Green Day at your recent Las Vegas star wedding.
He dressed as Billy Bob Thornton or whatever that dude out of Green Day is called.
Billy Joe. I did, yeah.
What does that involve?
I had two best men dressed. Basically, it involves downloading a picture from the internet and imitating it.
But you had mascara on as well, didn't you?
I did have some mascara on. Me and both my best men.
Right.
But then there's no women in Green Day, so what was
actually,
Laura
not mascara,
dressed?
Hang on, that's the wrong word. Eyeliner.
What's the difference?
Yeah, I don't know. Mascara goes in your eyelashes. No, I didn't know that.
Right.
Yeah.
All of which in no way suggests that we don't have that much to talk about in part three. Tom Lutz.
Yes.
Birmingham. How are you doing in the Championship?
Not very well, but we're doing very well in Europe.
That's interesting.
Where we're through to the group stage. It is interesting because we've got half the squad that we did last season.
Lost a lot of players,
didn't
you?
Lost a lot of players. Some of which have surprised me, in that Scott Dan is a very, very good player, and he's ended up at Blackburn, who are effectively just going to go down again from the Premier League, so he's just going to find himself in the same position as he did last season. Roger Johnson's been brilliant for Wolves. It's a little surprise there. But to have got through to the Europa League groups is an amazing achievement, really. One of the problems with the Europa League is that now we're in the groups, that's another six matches, and when you're kind of...
Is it a minimum 56 competitive matches you're going to have played or something at the end of the season?
Something ridiculous. We have got very nice away trips, though, to Bruges, Braga and Maribor, which is... I've been on Google Maps looking at all the towns. Getting quite excited about which ones I'm going
You clearly have got very excited about that, Tom.
Yes.
Good to hear anyway about Birmingham. What about Norwich?
Hey!
We haven't spoken yet about Norwich and your adventures in the Premier League.
Yeah, it's going
to
be...
You went to the game at Wigan, didn't you?
Yeah, I went away to Wigan and away to Chelsea. And there was a marked difference between the two grounds, and neither of them, I thought, sent out signs of a vibrant, healthy league. I really quite enjoyed the Championship, and I even enjoyed League One, but like, it was a terrible game of football at Wigan, and Wigan was about half full. I think we certainly made the most noise, but we probably had about 40% of the fans in the entire ground. And then went to Chelsea, and that was just a thoroughly, thoroughly depressing experience. I mean, I thought we played well. We kind of messed it up at the end. We made a couple of rookie errors, but we did play well, and we bossed them for periods, and we made John Terry in particular like a bit of a chump. The atmosphere in the ground was leaden, to say the least. There was just no singing whatsoever. And we were great. We were trying to wind them up. We were trying to take the mickey, and they wouldn't even respond to having the mickey taken out of them. We didn't even get ironic rounds of applause. It was like, unless you're Barcelona coming here for the quarterfinal of the Champions League, we really are not bothered. I have to say, studies of the Bribery Act take note now. I was there on a little corporate jolly, and I was in a corporate box. Yeah, exactly. And when we scored, I got really excited, and I was jumping around a bit. And there were people in the box, Chelsea fans, turning around, applauding me, and going, well done. because it struck me that they hadn't seen anybody get that excited about a goal in Stamford Bridge for a while.
Well, you've certainly been seeing some goals. Conceded.
Penalties right. Conceded.
You
red
can count
cards
the number
conceded.
Of goals you conceded on one hand, but then having said that, you're from Norwich, so...
Might be two hands.
Is it three?
Half a hand? Yeah. The third, the mysterious third hand.
I'd rather have three hands than half a hand.
Yeah. Anyway, so... But it's all going well. Listen, one question we were curious about...
Yes.
...a week or two ago was your excellent goalkeeper, is it John Ruddy?
Mm.
Yeah. He got sent off and they brought in his replacement.
Rudd. Declan.
Declan Rudd. And
do we have somebody else who's called Roo? Yeah.
Yeah.
And then
do you?
No.
Oh.
But we've got a crop of like three under 19 England goalkeepers, so look out for them.
Oh really?
Yeah, Rudd is
three
one
of them.
Yeah, Rudd, then Steer, and then there's another one that we've got who's going to have to play reserve because we're down to the bare bones of keepers.
Producer Ben wants to know if you're in for the West Ham keeper Rude Boffin.
Right, but it's in the wrong name.
Oh.
Nominative determinately.
Yeah,
it's inaccurate.
Yeah.
Yeah, John Ruddy looks all right there, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does, doesn't he?
Big lad.
Yeah. Big chap.
We've got a lot of big lads.
Keeper.
A lot of big lads.
Yeah. Sorry. Dear me, I had this big bowl of yogurt and it's playing havoc with my digestive system. Norwich, well, go Canaries and that. But you're confident you're still going to be here next year?
I'm not confident at all. Okay. But I'm sure we will give it 110%.
Excellent news. Is that all for today?
I think we couldn't close the pub without mentioning the note sent round by producer Ben himself earlier this morning.
Ooh.
And tweeted, I believe, as well, by
that.
Producer Ben, about a certain Newcastle owner who
that one.
May or may not have chosen to relieve himself of the burden of clothing in a Mansfield drinking establishment in the small hours of the morning.
Mansfield or a Mansfield?
Well, it was somebody's. It was somebody's birthday. No, and they were having
it was a Chinese restaurant.
Fair
wasn't
enough.
It?
And he stripped himself of clothing as effectively he has Newcastle of etc. and so on.
Yeah,
well, I don't think he's having a laugh. I don't think there's anything wrong.
What
with
I
that.
Liked was yeah. that it looked as if that when he was down to his pants and he had his belt, he was kind of flagellating himself at the same time.
And he wasn't quite as flabby as I thought. He's kind of. But, like, the world's strongest man, people.
I thought
like
he looked relatively youthful.
Yeah, he's bulky rather than flabby, I thought.
Yeah.
And the whole thing, they were hardly candid snaps. So I think this whole thing might even have... You know, he might have welcomed the publicity, but I don't have a problem with that. Somebody,
there's a quote in the Sunday, in the People's Piece, saying he's a great boss.
There you go.
Yeah.
Right there.
I thought it was quite interesting. I quite enjoyed the contrast, though, because Gazzetta today had a report of Massimo Cellino, who's the Cagliari owner.
Yes.
Who had been playing, because he fancies himself a bit of a musician, playing a nightclub event along with Ian Pace from Deep Purple, Chris Slade from AC/DC. Key Marcello from Europe, and I just quite enjoyed the contrast of Mike Ashley's big night out and Cellino.
Well, they both sound like quality events, don't they? Wow, that's quite an impressive lineup he managed to pull together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very good. That's it for today's Football Weekly. Football Weekly Extra will roll around on Thursday. Reveling in more top international action and casting a little look forward to the return of club football on the weekend. Many thanks for joining us. Do send us in your posts and tweets. Lord knows we may need them. Thanks to Paolo, to Paul and to Tom, and we'll be back on Thursday.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.